This is Eco Radio KC, a locally produced exploration of positive solutions to the ecological challenges we face as we work to create a healthier future for our community and the planet.
Good evening, and thank you for tuning in to Eco Radio. On tonight's program, we'll be talking about Eagle Days with folks from the Jayhawk Audubon Society in Lawrence, Kansas. But first, I'm Natural E with your headline news. Lawmakers in Wyoming have introduced a bill that would block the use of renewable energy in the state. If passed, utilities that use wind or solar to produce power for Wyoming residents would be penalized with a costly fine of $10 per megawatt hour. Under Senate File 71, only six resources, coal, hydroelectric, nuclear, oil, natural gas, and net metering systems such as rooftop solar or backyard wind projects, are considered eligible generating resources. Wyoming is by far the nation's largest coal producer and a major producer of natural gas and crude oil, but the state also has some of the best onshore wind resources in the U.S., with wind power constituting 8% of the state's energy. Wyoming is the only state in the country that taxes wind energy production, and a proposed tax increase has effectively stalled a Wyoming power company's plans to build the largest wind farm in the country. Like most of the wind power already generated by the state, the power generated by the massive Carbon County wind farm will head to other states. While this new bill would allow out-of-state wind power sales to continue, it certainly discourages future renewable energy development. ExxonMobil was dealt a major blow on Wednesday after a Massachusetts judge ordered the company to hand in more than 40 years of climate research. On Wednesday, Suffolk Superior Court Judge Heidi E. Brager denied the oil giant a protective order that would have blocked Massachusetts Attorney General Maura Healey's subpoenas for Exxon's internal research on climate change. Quote, "This affirms our authority to investigate fraud," end quote, Healy tweeted after the decision. She continued, quote, "ExxonMobil must come clean about what it knew about climate change," end quote. Exxon is cooperating with New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman's own subpoena and has already turned over thousands of pages of documents. Healy and Schneiderman are among 20 state attorneys generals who have launched an unprecedented investigation into whether Exxon knew about man-made climate change for several decades, but disseminated false information to shareholders and the public in order to boost profits. And the ecologist.org reports, British scientists have just discovered one of the richest stores of carbon on Earth, 140,000 square kilometers of peatland, an area larger than England, in the forests of the central Congo Basin. The reservoir of compressed plant material holds at least 30 billion tons of carbon. And this pristine and undisturbed sink of peat is the equivalent of about two decades of fossil fuel combustion in the United States. The discovery, reported in the journal Nature, is significant for three reasons. One is that it adds a substantial new component to one of the most head-scratching problems in climate science, the arithmetic of the carbon cycle, a cycle vital both to all living things and to climate machinery. The second is a reminder that in a world combed with geographers and topographers, monitored for 30 years by dozens of orbiting satellites and explored and exploited by more than 7 billion people, there is still scope for important discovery. And third, if this carbon store is opened up to development, it could end up emitting a massive volume of carbon dioxide, with disastrous results for global climate. This is already happening in Indonesia, where huge areas of peatland swamp forest are being logged, drained, burnt, and cleared for oil palm plantations, making the country the world's fifth biggest carbon emitter. And I'm done with the news. Mike, it's all yours.
All right. Thank you very much, Natural E. As you heard at the top of the program, we're going to be looking at Eagle Days, a Kansas event, 21st annual Kaw Valley Eagle Days, coming up on Saturday, January 21st from 8:30 to 4 p.m. And we're going to find out all about it, but basically people will be meeting at Free State High School, and there's a lot more information at CawValleyEaglesDay.com. We'll also give you a little phone number a bit later on, but I want to bring our guests in here because they know a lot more about this than I do. The 21st annual Kaw Valley Eagle Days. This is put on by the Audubon Society as well as some other organizations. And so Joyce, I'm going to start with you. Can you maybe tell us a little bit about the history of Eagles Day?
And sure. Thanks, Mike. Yeah, 1997 was the first Kaw Valley Eagles Day, and it was initially started and done at Riverfront Mall in Lawrence, which was really handy because the Eagles were right outside the windows and they would fly by occasionally, and it was pretty exciting. And, of course, after a while, Riverfront Mall closed, and we had to move to a different location. We were at the fairgrounds, and then we moved, I think maybe 7 years or so ago, to Free State High School, which turns out to be a really great location. And one of our partners, the school district, is working with us on that. The Corps has always, our U.S. Army Corps of Engineers has been one of our partners from the very beginning. And two of our people that are here with us today are from the Corps and know as much as I do about all of this. It's been exciting and somewhat of a challenge. We initially started out with a grant from EPA, and then that went away, and we had to kind of scramble to how we were going to continue to fund this, and we were able to find some local businesses that helped underwrite it. So it continues to be free to attend, and we think that that's really great, that it's a very family-oriented organization and an event. And the other thing that's somewhat different about our event is that there are 20 different groups that participate as exhibitors. And so there are nonprofits, there are county groups, and there are a couple of state agencies, as well as the Corps, which is one of the federal agencies involved. So it's been really fun. And I think initially, and maybe Mike can talk about this because he's the Eagle expert in Kansas. Initially, when we did this, there were not as many Eagles as what we see nowadays. And it was an attempt to get people's attention drawn to Eagles and what needed to be done to encourage them to nest and breed in this area. I do remember when we first moved to Lawrence in 1982, I about took out Weaver's front window because in my peripheral vision I saw a bald eagle flying up over the top of the river, and I was not anticipating seeing eagles in Kansas. Yeah. So that was really terrific.
Yeah, that's great. That's exciting. So initially it was felt that just to raise awareness of,
right. Yeah. Yeah, actually, the Kaw Valley Heritage Alliance was the initial entity that sponsored this, and we had a grant from EPA for a couple years. And then it was done in Manhattan as well. Unfortunately, they did not continue to do it out there. But it's also done with some of the core lakes out that way, Milford and whatnot. So it was... from the beginning, we had lots of different groups that were involved because the Heritage Alliance had 30 different partners that had signed on to an agreement. And so those groups all were part of this. And so that kind of tradition has held on to today.
Well, that's great. So what was it like? First of all, maybe like tell a little bit about what the Audubon Society's mission is, so maybe we can. Was that a gotcha question? Or?
it's a variety of things, but it's primarily science-based education, some activism if needed, to speak out on issues that affect bird species or any animal species and habitats for protection of habitat that is home to birds and other wildlife.
So this seems like a natural fit. The Audubon Society seemed like a perfect organization to put on Eagle Days.
Well, and one of the things that actually happened is Prairie Park Nature Center has been part of this for a long, long time. And they have a bald eagle. And it became available, I don't know, do you guys remember when that eagle was made available to Jayhawk? It was, we Jayhawk Audubon paid for the transportation of the eagle from, I think it was Wyoming, wow, to be brought into Lawrence. And it's an education bird that Marty Burrell, who has a rehabilitator's permit, and she brings that bird to Eagles Day. So when people come on the 21st, they'll be able to see a bald eagle up really close. She also has other raptors as well.
And then, so also you're expecting to see some in the wild as well?
Yes. There are two trips, one at 10:30 and one at
10:45.
Okay. One at 10:45 and one at 3 o'clock. So, yeah, there'll be. And I'm not sure who's out in the field, but they let people know where the best place to go to see the birds are. It will be. And so then the buses are free. First come, first serve, and the people then go out and see the birds in the wild.
What kind of turnout have you had in the past? Do you any idea? Like,
well, last year we thought we had at least 2,000 people.
No kidding! Wow.
Yeah, it was great. It's great.
And Mike, if I could back up,
sure,
just for a minute and mention the field trips. The field trips are really one of the highlights. Joyce has mentioned that you can get up and close and personal to a bald eagle at the presentations, which is wonderful for people to really get a full understanding of their majesty and their size and a lot of their characteristics. But it's amazing to me, we have a lot of birds in the state. We had 107 active nests in Kansas last year, which is a record. But at this time of year is why we do Eagle Days at this time of year, because normally we have a lot of wintering birds that come down from Canada and North Dakota, and we could have anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 birds in the state at this time of year. And it's amazing to me how many people have never seen a bald eagle in the wild. And the really excitement about this is you take three busloads of people out, and we have spotters that go out early in the morning to find a bald eagle. And we have some great volunteers from Audubon who bring some really high-dollar scopes, $2,000-$3,000 scopes, so you're going to get a really good look at a bald eagle. You do not have to have your own binoculars or your own spotting scopes. And we set them up, and then we have interpreters out there who can explain what you're seeing, why, and some of the characteristics. And it's just really cool to see some young kids and even some older adults who get all excited because it's the first time they've actually seen a bald eagle in the wild.
Wow. That is pretty exciting. I mean, and especially in some ways, I imagine, you know, older people might get more excited because people have been around to remember that it was, you know, pretty rough going for the bald eagle for many years. It was on the endangered species list, is that right, or was it?
No, that's correct. The bald eagle was on the original endangered species list believe it was March 11th, 1967. And so the population has rebounded to the point that they were taken off the endangered species list on August 8th, 2007. So the bald eagle population is a major achievement or accomplishment in terms of us dealing with environmental problems and improving the environment for a number of the species here.
Especially the fact, you know, the American eagle, it's a symbol of America. You would think that there would be a little bit of concern in that area as well. There's a couple of different ways I can go with this. So eagles are migratory then, or do they, like, they're not here all year?
Actually, there's two populations of bald eagles. We have a resident population. Like I said, we had documented 107 active nests that produced young in Kansas last year. So those birds stay all year. But we also have a migratory population that will nest up north. And when they eat fish and waterfowl primarily, although they'll take small mammals from time to time. But once their feeding source, the creek or the river or the pond, freezes over, of course, there's nothing, they can't get to the fish, and they will follow the migrating waterfowl down, say, in early to mid-November, and they'll spend their winters here as long as there's open water feeding. Some will go farther south, and they'll stay here until maybe the first mid-March when the weather starts to warm up, and they'll go back north and nest up there in a very nutritious environment, so they go up there. But we do have birds that stay here all year.
So are those different breeds then, or is it just a matter of, like, choice?
No, it's just a matter of choice. Wow. And habitat openings. We have I have worked since 1989 with the Fish and Wildlife Service, and I mentioned 1989 because it's the first year that we had a successful pair of bald eagles nest and produce young in Kansas since the turn of the century.
Wow.
And over that time, an individual by the name of Dan Mulhern, who worked for the Fish and Wildlife Service, decided it would be important to try and trap and band the birds. And we've banded, I worked with them to band it, over 200 eagles, and a number of those birds have come back to Kansas to nest, and we've been able to identify them by their visual identification bands. And that's pretty gratifying to know that not only some birds coming in, pioneering birds, and finding new habitats. So we have a lot of open habitats, both in Kansas and Missouri, that could support a breeding pair of bald eagles. But it's neat that some of their offspring are coming back, and we can actually prove that.
That's fantastic. That's great. You guys must get a lot of satisfaction. It must be a rewarding feeling, that because I know you guys are so involved with this. So when they were on the endangered species list, it seems to me like, if I remember correctly, the main problem that they were facing, the main obstacle that the species was facing, was DDT, and it was affecting the width of the eggshells, meant that the viable young were not. Is that?
Yeah, the biggest problem for bald eagles came with the introduction of DDT after World War II. And, of course, DDT was applied to crop fields, and it was a pesticide to crop fields by farmers, and it washed off into lakes and rivers. And the thing was, DDT would accumulate in fish flesh. And I'd mentioned earlier that fish is the number one thing a bald eagle would like to eat. Well, as they ate this fish, the toxin was transferred to their bodies, built up in their bodies, and as a result, the females frequently laid eggs with such thin eggshells that the eggs broke before the embryos were ready to hatch. Now, that was a big problem. Unfortunately, of course, habitat destruction as man came across the country. And it would surprise you to know, and it just shocks me, that we still have some people out there shooting bald eagles. Several of our bald eagles that have been banded have been shot and been recovered and returned to the bird banding laboratory, and we were able to track them down. And obviously, one of the things when I give a program, a lot of times people are somewhat saddened that the bald eagle has been taken off the endangered species list because they think it's no longer protected. And that's not true. The bald eagle is the most protected bird in the world, even though it's no longer on the endangered species list. To me, that's a great fact to celebrate. But the bald eagle is still protected by the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and the Lacey Act. So it's still very, very well protected, even though it's no longer endangered.
Wow. Well, that's good news, I guess. So what obstacles do eagles face today?
I think probably the obstacles that they take, there's different obstacles between young adults and juveniles. Unfortunately, about 75% of juveniles never live long enough to see their first birthdays. That's why it's taken so long to get the populations to rebound. One of the biggest things is they get separated from adults before they're really good hunters. Some of them starve. Some of them succumb to diseases. And also, that first flight out of the nest can be pretty treacherous. It's kind of like giving a 17-year-old a key to a Ferrari. You're jumping out of the nest, and you don't know how good you're going to fly. And if you crash and break a wing, and you're out in the wild, basically, you're probably not going to survive. But habitat destruction and harassment are probably some of the biggest things that they face today.
One thing, a while back we had someone on the program from an organization called SOAR, Save Our Avian Raptors. They're based out of Iowa. And one of their pet peeve issues that they were dealing with regard to protecting eagles was lead, I don't know, shot. What is that, the right way to say it?
Yes.
Not a hunter. But so apparently people use lead in whatever they're hunting, whether it be deer or maybe something small. And then if they kill something and just leave it there, maybe eagle will, or other animals will scavenge that meat and then get lead poisoning, essentially, like this. They had a blind eagle on site that they attributed to this. Do you
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing that I did leave out. Lead poisoning is a significant issue for all raptors, but particularly bald eagles. Fortunately, the federal government makes it illegal to shoot waterfowl with lead shot anymore. They have to use steel. And as you can imagine, if you're shooting waterfowl over a pond or lake or river, the potential for a wounded goose, like I said, bald eagles also like waterfowl, second thing on their menu they'd like to eat. If they were to pick up a wounded goose or something that had been shot with lead, they could certainly get lead poisoning. The other thing that's come to play recently, people have started realizing that even fishermen, a lot of time, if you break a line and there's some lead around the edge of a lake or something, we have had a couple of bald eagles, I believe, Marty at Prairie Park Nature Center has determined that they had ingested a sinker, inadvertently, of course, but then that can lead to lead poisoning, potentially death.
Yeah. Wow. So let's get back to some more happy things in eagles. So there has been a turnaround. There's been, you know, there's more eagles in this part of the country than there were 30 years ago, for sure, right?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the population nationwide has improved tremendously, which is why they were taken off the endangered species list. I mean, the only state that they were never endangered was Alaska. They'd always had a healthy population, but they had been endangered in every other state, except, of course, Hawaii, where they don't exist. But they have been taken off the endangered species list in all the other states. So that's a tremendous success story.
That is great. So, Mike, I see you're going to be presenting at Eagles Day on Saturday. What do you got up your sleeve?
Well, basically what I try to do is give people a feeling for the history of the developing population in Kansas. As I mentioned earlier, I've worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service since 1989. And back in 1989, 90, and 91, we actually trapped bald eagles and we banded them. And that's how we can tell where they've come back to and from. And today, or since 1992, we have recruited volunteer tree climbers who go up and when the eaglets are about 6 weeks of age, put them in a bag, lower them to us, and we band those. And my program's pretty much going to go over the history of trapping, banding, and the return of bald eagles and the expansion of the population over the years. Give to people of where we started from and where we're at today.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we do have a caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what part of town you're calling from?
Well, it's Mine Guy from the 4th District here in Kansas City, Missouri. Yeah, one thing, and I'm glad you brought up the issue of DDT, but I think one thing that's important for Americans to realize, even with our success with the bald eagle, we still manufacture DDT and ship it around the world because, you know, you got to spread the poison around. And I think, you know, it'd be nice if we could get back to more environmental ways of handling our pest problems and various other things. But, yeah, I mean, we ship DDT all over the world, you know. Just we protect our eagle. And wouldn't it be nice if our national bird had ended up being the turkey? Would that make a difference in military? So, hey, peace out.
Thanks for that call, Mine Guy. If you'd like to call in and ask a question or make a comment, the number is 816-931-5534, 816-931-5534. Go ahead.
And, Mike, if I could just make one point. I do want to we talked about the significance of DDT being applied to crop fields and having the effect it's had on some of our wildlife populations. And I do want to point out that this is really not the fault of the farmer. A lot of times I'll get people who will say, well, it's the farmer's fault. Well, actually what it is the farmer back in the day was told by the EPA and other conservation organizations that this was a safe product to use, and it was the most cost-effective to use. So they were using what was cost-effective. They were trying to make a living, and once it was banned, you know, most farmers were fine with that, and they moved on to whatever other chemical the government said was safe. So, you know, we're not blaming agriculture here. I want to make that point clear. They were simply taking advantage of a product that really EPA and the other government agencies said was safe. So,
probably the USDA at the time.
Yes,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's a good point. We're going to take our first break, and then we'll be back with these great folks from the Audubon Society. And if you have any questions about eagles, give us a call at 816-931-5534.
Richard Wolff.
It's a kind of economic nationalism, but it relies on the mass of the working class not understanding that if they get the jobs, they're going to get the whacking of their standard of living they've never seen before. So those of you that are scared, that's exactly what you should be. People who aren't scared are not paying attention.
Alternative Radio, Wednesday, 9 a.m.
The Olathe Human Relations Commission and the Olathe Public Schools presents the Martin Luther King Jr. Celebration, A Purpose Greater Than Myself. That's the Olathe Conference Center at Embassy Suites, 10401 South Ridgeview Road, Olathe, Kansas.
This event has been postponed 1 week until January 22nd from 3 to 5 p.m. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City, Community Radio.
When tragedy inspires change, on this current cast. After a hard rain in the spring of 1889, a man-made lake burst through a dam. A wall of water three stories high ripped through Johnstown, Pennsylvania, destroying the town and killing more than 2,000 people. Jet Sugarman, a law professor at Fordham University, says attempts by townspeople to sue dam owners were unsuccessful.
No one ever paid a penny through a legal claim to any of the victims.
After that tragedy, many states around the country changed their laws. Today, landowners are held strictly liable for accidents caused by dangerous behavior, like storing large amounts of water behind poorly maintained dams. Current Cast, produced with Cornell's Atkinson Center for a Sustainable Future and made possible by the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, online at currentcast.org.
And we're back here in the studio. If you want to join in on the conversation, the number to call is 816-931-5534. And Joyce Wolf is here in the studio, along with Bunny Watkins and Mike Watkins. And Bunny, we haven't heard from you yet. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about what exactly is going to happen on Eagles Day. And again, if you're just tuning in, Eagles Day is this Saturday, January 21st, from 8:30 to 4, and people are meeting at Free State High School in Lawrence, Kansas. So,
well, we've talked about the exciting opportunities that people have to see a live bald eagle up close, as well as other predators, other animals that the Prairie Park Nature Center brings to the event. But we also have many exhibits at tables that are set up by what Joyce mentioned earlier, the different organizations of the from the community, where there's many hands-on activities for children of all ages. But specifically for younger children, it's a wonderful activity to bring your children to, where they can dissect an owl pellet, they can make an eagle hat, they can learn about different animals from the zoo and talk about, you know, the protection of animals that we have from the zoos. They can learn about environmental issues in the community through different environmental games, arts and crafts. It's just a wonderful event of, like I said, for children of all ages, but specifically the younger grade school children, that there's so many things for them to do and act out and learn. And that's what we're trying to do, is our attempt is to educate the young on our environmental issues and conservation of our natural resources.
So tell us about dissecting owl pellets. What's
that's one of the more popular activities of the day. We actually purchase owl pellets, which have been sterilized, so they are safe to tear apart. And the child can, or an adult, can go ahead and dissect them with a pair of tweezers, and they can actually look at the skeleton that's inside, so they can see what that owl has eaten, if it's a rodent or a rabbit, for example, and they can put those skeletons back together if they so choose.
Wow.
To take that much time to put the whole skeleton together of that mouse or rat or rabbit. And it's interesting watching the children. Some children will just be happy with having a pile of bones and taking them all out. And other children really want to take the time to put that animal back together. And it's a very popular activity of the day.
That's great.
We also have a clothespin eagle activity that seems to be very popular. We've been doing that all 21 years, and we've had adults come back and say, I remember I started this activity when I was a kid. It's pretty basic, but it's one of the popular activities that children will make an eagle out of a clothespin with a little paper. And we also have totem poles that the kids can make out of toilet paper rolls, used toilet paper rolls that they can put pieces of the eagle back together. One of the other popular ones is making an eagle hat where they have a head on and they can, you know, make their own head, an eagle head, and walk around. And the kids just have a wonderful time. There's an actual giant nest that is actual size of an eagle nest, which is amazing to people. They don't realize how big they are. But that nest, you know, in the wild can get up to 1 ton of the sticks that are, you know, 5 feet in diameter. And so the kids can actually climb in a nest that we make out of the sticks that they can reenact. And we have models of the actual size of the eagles, of their wingspan, so that they can compare their wingspan when they open their arms up to the size of an eagle.
That's fantastic. So that's an interesting question about or point about the eagle's nest. So eagle's nests pretty much have to be pretty big or can be.
Well, based on the size of the bird, the eagle nest has to be pretty big. If you think about it, the average nest up in Alaska, and I've kind of used that because you find that in literature, is 5 to 6 feet in diameter, 8 to 10 feet deep, and weighs over a ton. Now, according to the Guinness Book of World Records, the largest nest ever built was down in St. Petersburg, Florida, and that was built by a pair of bald eagles. And if you just try to even put your mind around this, it was 10 feet in diameter, 20 feet deep, and weighed over 2 tons.
Wow.
So needless to say, eagle nests are huge. I try to tell kids it's like having a small Volkswagen sometimes up in a tree or similar to that size. But they don't necessarily start out that big. Bald eagles come back to the same nesting territory year after year, and they will do one of two things. They'll either build two or three nests and kind of rotate to nest to nest. But about half of the pairs will actually continue to use the same nest year after year, and they keep adding to it, getting it bigger and bigger. And usually, eventually, our experience has been eventually the nest will probably go down due to the weight during a heavy wind storm, because a tree, it's difficult to support that much weight for long periods of time. But nests can last 10, 15 years, but they are huge structures. And they're that big because if you think about the size of a bald eagle, females are the larger of the two. They weigh 10 to 14 pounds, and they have a wingspan of 6.5 to 7.5 feet, whereas males weigh 8 to 10 pounds and have a wingspan of 6 to 7 feet. Well, you start out with an egg that's kind of the size of a jumbo chicken egg. I mean, it's not really that big. And when the eaglet first hatches, it's only 3 to 4 ounces. But they grow tremendously, and by the time they're ready to fly or fledge from the nest, they're pretty much full grown at 70 to 80 days. And if you think about that, you can have 1 to 3 eggs if you're a bald eagle. And if you have 3 full-grown eaglets getting ready to fly or fledge from the nest, and mom and dad coming in from time providing food, you don't need a big structure when the eggs are laid, but by the time the family's ready to leave the nest, you better have a pretty good size structure to accommodate everybody.
So it seems like it takes a special kind of tree to be able to support that kind of. Are there certain trees the eagles prefer? Or
we find them in a number of different trees, sycamores, oaks. The thing you'll find usually if you're looking for a bald eagle nest is you look for the dominant tree in a row of trees or around a lake. I mean, they want a big tree. They like to have good vision. But the other thing is you have to have some branches where the young or the eagles can actually fly in with that wingspan and not hit a branch. So it's a combination of a large tree in the stand, and accessibility is a huge thing with that kind of wingspan.
Is there a minimal height they go for? I
don't know that I've seen a minimal height. A lot of our nests are anywhere from 40 to, we have one of our tree climber goes up, it's 95 feet off the ground. But, 40, 50 feet seems to be pretty average, 60 feet. They don't build at the top of the tree. They build about a quarter of the way down, so you have stronger branches to support that structure.
Yeah.
And probably the cool thing about it, I've been fortunate enough, I've been up in an eagle nest, and If you see it from the outside, it's very deep. I talked about being 6 to 8 feet deep. Well, that's actually all solid sticks. The top is kind of flat, like a platform. And that top, even though there's huge diameter sticks putting this nest together, it's all lined with fine grasses to be soft for the eggs and for the young. And there's a little egg cup right in the middle that they lay their eggs. So it really is just kind of this really cool flat tree house up in the middle of this really awesome tree. And generally close to some form of body of water because they like to, as I've said before, eat fish and waterfowl. So they're going to be found around some type of water habitat.
So tell us about the circumstances that led you getting into an eagle's nest. Was it on a dare or a bet? Or?
Well, I was fortunate enough. We usually have a tree climber that goes up into the tree, as I said before, and bags up the eaglets when they're 6 weeks old. At some locations, we worked very closely with Westar Energy. They've been a great supporter of the program. And in some situations, we can actually take a bucket truck up and pluck the eaglets out of the nest. And I was fortunate enough, I've ridden up in the bucket truck several times. This particular nest, I believe, was 70 feet off the ground, and you get strapped in on safety lines, and you crawl out of the bucket into the nest and manage to pick the eaglets up, put them in a bag, and take them back down. I am not brave enough to be a climber, but I will ride a bucket truck if I've got somebody who knows what they're doing with me.
Wow. So what was that like? Was your heart racing, or was it like, were you enjoying it, or were you too focused on the task at hand? Or
I enjoyed it when it was done. I was really focused at the task at hand. I'm very afraid of heights, so climbing out of a bucket 70 feet in the air was pretty. It was pretty spooky, but I just concentrated on what I had to do. However, the guy who operating the bucket said, when I climbed into the nest, said, "You got a lot of guts. I'd never do that." And so I advised him later when we got on the ground that was a statement better made for when we were down rather than when I was in the nest.
Really?
But it worked out fine, and we managed to band 3 eaglets that day. And so it was a tremendous experience. And to see the view they have from a nest 70 feet in the air is just spectacular. It's wonderful to say that you've actually been in a nest.
Yeah.
Probably one of the thrills of my life.
I bet that's got to be an incredible experience. Well, first of all, it had to be like somewhat of a leap of faith hoping that the nest would support you.
And that's the interesting, you know, these nests are very strong, and we have a rule when banding eagles, and the main rule is when in doubt, always err in favor of the eagles. We make sure the nest is in a live tree. We make sure the nest is very structurally sound before we ever climb into it. We have never had an issue with the nest. We have had tree climbers get up to the bottom of a nest and say, "I think the branches are a little weak. I'm not really sure." And they just come back down. But then we always err in favor of the eagles. We never take a chance when it comes to putting a nest on the ground or injuring a bird.
That's great. I think we have another caller. Caller, you're on the air. What's your name and what part of town you calling from?
It's Mary from KCMO.
Hi, Mary. What do you have to share with us?
I love your show about eagles, and I'm you probably already know, but we have two at Lakeside Nature Center, and one that came in January of 2006 was actually from the St. Joe area. I was just looking it up, and the other one we already had from 2002, and if they want to see them in the city, they can come right to Lakeside.
And so for our listeners that might not have been listening last week, Lakeside Nature Center is just east of 435 on Gregory. Is that about right?
That's exactly right. It's about 4,000 East Gregory, and I know that Lakeside goes up almost every year and does a presentation up there at Eagle Days. So I just wanted to say great show, and thanks for coming on.
All right. Thank you. We appreciate it, Mary. All right, you are listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. And we're talking with folks from the Audubon Society about eagles. And the reason we're talking about them now is because this is the Monday right before Eagles Day, which takes place this Saturday in Lawrence, Kansas. There is a website, and it's CawValleyEaglesDay.com. There's also a phone number, 785-843-7665. That's a general info number. There's also a number there, I guess, in case there's questions that day. I'll give that number out as well. So in other words, if you decided you're going to go, but then you wake up and there's an ice storm that day, for example, you're not sure if it's on or not, you can call this number as well, 785-331-6022.
I think it'd be nice to mention that it's also, the event is free, and it's open to anyone that would like to come, and everything is free. The field trips are free. All the activities are free. You know, just come along and enjoy the day. There will be food for sale there that's provided by the high school. Their cafeteria provides food if people get hungry while they're at the event. But you can make a day of this event walking through the different exhibits, going to the presentations that Mike and Marty will be giving on the live bald eagles and the nesting bald eagle activities, as well as the field trips.
So tell us, where is Free State High School?
It's in the northwest part of Lawrence. It's just northeast of the intersection of 6th Street and Wakarusa Drive. The actual address is 4700 Overland Drive. And it's really easy to find. And there'll be signs out directing people to where they can park.
And again, that website probably has all this information, called valleyeaglesday.com.
Right.
And that's great. So what do you guys do the rest of when during the off season?
Well, Chehawk Audubon does a monthly program. We kind of follow the academic year. We start in August and go through November. We skip December and then pick up again in January and go through May. And we have a variety of topics that we talk about, because we're interested in more than birds, although that's our primary focus. As a matter of fact, our program for February is Lisa Grossman, and she is an artist, and she had an opportunity to be an artist in residence at some of the national parks, so she'll be talking about that experience.
Oh, well, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah.
That's great. And if people are interested in maybe getting involved with the Audubon Society, what's the best way? Someone's listening right now. Is there a website we can direct them to, or a phone number?
JayhawkAudubon.org.
All right.
Or maybe Society. I'm not sure. I never bothered to
Right,
look.
Right, right. Yeah.
It's probably JayhawkAudubonSociety.org.
Okay.
And it should have the programs. It'll have the newsletters and all the different activities. We do ordinary field trips, you know, other than going out to see eagles. We do things like up at Squaw Creek or some of the prairies. It just depends on, you know, the season and what people's interests are.
Hmm. So what can you tell us about eagles that we haven't already discussed that, you know, might surprise people? Like,
Well, I think a lot of people, when they see bald eagles, I think the size, and of course we've already mentioned that, but just a few things about them, their characteristics. They have tremendous eyesight. Depending on which scientist you believe, they have eyesight that's 5 to 8 times more powerful than ours. It said they can see small mammals up to 2 miles away, which usually kind of impresses the young kids. And their average cruising speed when they're flying around is about 40 miles an hour. But if they go into a stoop or a dive to go get a fish on the water, they can exceed a speed of 100 miles an hour.
Really? Wow.
Which is kind of like my wife going to Quick Shop. You know. And also, I think the thing that people see that ominous beak on them, which is important for tearing their prey apart. But the business end of a bald eagle is their talons. Their talons are made out of keratin, similar to our fingernails, and they constantly grow, and they're very sharp. And a lot of times when a bald eagle is sitting on a branch, it'll kind of rub its talons from side to side and use that bark as a file to keep them razor sharp. And once they hit their prey, scientists say they can hit their prey with twice the force of a .22 caliber bullet. So that's pretty impressive when you're a predator and you're coming in and your prey's close to the top of the water and you're coming down and you hit it with twice the force of a .22 caliber bullet. Chances are you're going to be pretty successful.
Wow.
But...
Yeah.
More?
Yeah, if you have, yeah.
I guess other interesting things. They do lay 1 to 3 eggs. It takes about 35 days of incubation. before they hatch. It takes another 70 or 80 days before they fly or fledge from the nest for the first time. And bald eagles are kind of unique. They do mate for life, which is important. But if something happens to one of the mates, they will remate. Mm-hmm. They will get a new mate. They've been documented to live up to 30 years in the wild and up to 50 years in captivity. So very long-lived birds. We have a very unique thing going on right now at our very first nest at Clinton Lake, which is just amazing. I talked about the first pair in 1989. We managed to trap the adult male in 1991, and he was fitted with purple visual identification band E, so we can tell if he comes back every year. And he has been back every year since 1991. Wow. Now, we know that he was 5 years of age. Bald eagles change color as they go from juveniles to adults.
Oh.
Juveniles, a lot of people will confuse with golden eagles, which is the only other eagle found in North America. They're kind of mottled brown. And it takes 5 years to develop their white head and their white tail. And another thing interesting happens, their beak goes from a dark brown to a yellow, and their eyes go from a brown to a golden color. But because of the plumage that was on that adult male when he first started nesting in 1989, we knew he was at least 5 years of age. And he's supposedly back again this year, which would make him 33 years old, which means we're setting some records here in terms of the literature shows, you know, the longest one in the wild years ago to be 30 years old.
Wow.
He will be 33 years old this year. He is back with his mate. Now, it's going to be interesting to see if he can pull off another clutch of young eaglets, because obviously he's getting to be pretty old, but he's been an amazing ambassador for the state in terms of the number of eagles that he has hatched and fledged over the years.
Wow.
Probably the only thing I mentioned, but if you look at the literature, generally bald eagles, when they hatch for the first 3 or 4 years, they kind of fly all over the country. And a unique example of that is we had one bird back in early 2000 that we banded sometime in May, and it left the lake in August, and it was found dead in Saskatchewan, Canada, 1,500 miles away 3 weeks later.
Wow.
So, you know, they do wander all over, but the cool thing is males generally come back within 100 miles of where they were fledged. And of our, I don't have the number off the top of my head, I want to say 10 or 12 males that we have identified that have banded or back nesting, they're all within 100 miles of where they fledged. So, you know, if you want to get a good population of bald eagles, try to produce a bunch of males, because they pair with the female and bring them back to where they originally fledged. And we've had real good success with that.
Wow, that's interesting. So are they social? Do they hang out with other eagles outside of their family, or...?
That's an excellent question. They're very social at this time of year. You will see large communal roosts during the winter.
Really?
However, once we get to mating season, they're very territorial. They will not allow another eagle to build nests within visual sight of the nest where they're at. And so a lot of our birds at this time of year, actually we're getting close to breeding season. Normally, 5 or 6 birds will start incubating eggs in Kansas the last week of January. And the month where most of our birds lay eggs and start incubating is February. And then March is the second month where most of them lay and incubate. So February 1st, March 2nd, and just the end of January is 3rd. If they lay eggs after the end of March, our experience has been they're not successful. So we're getting into the breeding season. You're starting to see a lot of our eagles start to defend, do some maintenance work on their nests and start to defend their nesting territory. In fact, just as an aside, if you've got a minute,
sure.
1 year when we, when a nest had moved on the Kansas River, I, was out talking to the landowner and went looking for the nest and walking through a big thicket of trees where I thought the new nest was. I had this weird feeling that something was looking over me, and I looked up and there was a dead male bald eagle hanging from a tree, and I shimmied up and got it, and I thought it had a bullet hole in its head. So I was concerned that, you know, this might be one of the nesting pair. Well, then I looked up and there was the two adults in the nest tree. Well, we sent the bird off for necropsy, which is basically a bird autopsy. And the person who did it said this was only the third time he'd seen it, that this adult male was intruding on the pair's nesting territory. And the hole that I saw in the head was actually a talon puncture.
Wow.
So they can defend their nest very aggressively. Usually they will try to, you know, shoo them off or chase them away, but obviously this particular male didn't get the hint. So they are very territorial during nesting season, very communal during the winter.
Oh, that's interesting. And so what about, like you mentioned, you went, in your example earlier you gave about, you know, that maybe a eagle might lay three eggs, so it might have three at once. Like is there a special relationship the siblings have with each other compared to?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the eggs are usually laid 1 to 2 days apart, and that is to give the chick that hatches first, the advantage to surviving. It's Mother Nature's way of saying, if there's not enough food, the oldest one begs for food first and is usually fed first, then the second, then the third. So if eventually there's not enough food to feed them all, at least one or two will survive, maybe not all three. In some of the good habitats that we have around Kansas that we've watched, Clinton, Perry Lakes, there's enough food, and frequently they'll fledge three eaglets if all three of them hatch. But again, they are laid a couple of days apart, and when we band, you can easily see that in the development of the plumage on the birds when you bring them down to band them.
Yeah, well, that's great. So our time is just about over. This has really gone by fast. Is there anything we haven't shared that we want to make sure the public knows about?
I think the only thing I'd mention, I help lead some of the field trips, is please watch the weather. If it's going to be cold, dressed appropriately, especially keep the kids warm. That can be difficult if we're out on a cold day and you're not dressed for the field. We usually stay on the blacktop, so it's not you're going to get in the mud or anything. But the cold weather can be an issue, and we usually bring a step stool for one of the spotting scopes so the younger kids can step up to a spotting scope on his tripod. We try to cater to the young kids. And with that, I would just say, you know, Saturday is a great time to come out, enjoy the natural resources, and get to see our national symbol in the wild, which is a pretty unique and valued experience, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
And again, we're talking this Saturday, January 21st. So people are going to start gathering as early as 8:30. Is that right?
That's correct.
At the Free State School, High School. And then it goes till 4 p.m. That day. The website is CawValleyEaglesDay.com. There's also a general info phone number, 785-843-7665. And then there's also, for last-minute details, there is another number, 785-331-6022. Have you guys done anything to get ready for the 22nd annual Caw Valley Eagles Day, or...?
Well, one of the things that we do is let all the children in the different schools in the Lawrence area, Eudora, Baldwin, Mary LeCompton, we give them these little mini brochures like you're looking at the large one. So it's just a kind of reminder in that they're definitely welcome to come, and there's lots of fun things for them to do throughout the day as they visit all the different exhibitors' tables.
Well, that's great. Folks, I can't thank you enough for coming in here on this holiday and on this not less than stellar weather day and coming in to Kansas City. So,
thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And keep us posted with other things you're doing, because we like to share, make sure our listeners know all about it. So, again, our calendar is very short today. There is this 21st Annual Eagles Day that takes place on Saturday, starting at 8:30, goes from 8:30 to 4:00, and again, CawValleyEaglesDay.com is the website. And then I have one other event on Saturday. That's the Seed Savers KC 2017 Seed Exchange, and that takes place Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center, which is at 4750 Troost. And basically, this is a chance for people to bring in seeds and take seeds and trade things. And they're asking people to bring their, if you're donating seeds, make them individually labeled containers such as envelopes, bags, jars, pots. Things you can trade are seeds, bulbs, cuttings, oils, tinctures, dried herbs, dried vegetables, ferment starters, fresh eggs, pickles, jams, jellies, and garden and environmental homestead books. That all that takes place Saturday from 11 to 1 here in Kansas City at the Anita B. Gorman Conservation Discovery Center. So we're going to, I think what we'll do now is just go out with some music. We're going to hear from Sapphire, the Uppity Blues Women, and Bald Eagle right here on 90.1 FM.